Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to another daily Billie Jean King Cup Finals podcast. We'll mostly be covering the Billie Jean King Cup Finals today, but we'll also be giving you a little bit of a bonus preview of the ATP Finals, which are due to start here in Turin in a couple of days' time. And I say here because I am in Turin. I'm in about the most Turin-y bit of Turin you can be, because I'm in a hotel that is on the site of an old Fiat factory. And it does feel, I mean, it's very nice, very, very functional. Everything works, lovely. But it does feel a little bit like I'm in a factory. And it possibly sounds like it too. So please bear that in mind.
Okay.
with any echoes that you're hearing over the course of this podcast. Matt, of course, is in Seville. Hello, Matt.
Hello. I'm in my usual position, which about 2 minutes ago was occupied by Katerina Siniakova and Barbora Krejcikova. So we had to wait for them to finish in order to podcast tonight.
Outrageous. Mm. Absolutely outrageous that they were holding things up. And we are also joined from Solihull by David Law. David, what's your name? Where'd you come from?
Very good.
You've been waiting all day to do that, haven't you?
I've been thinking all day about it.
Do you remember the theme tune? Da 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 da. Yep.
And she used to say blind date, didn't she?
And your host, she separated Cilla out the D's. Black. I never got that far.
How are you doing, David?
All right.
How many messages have you received about your would-be life as a reality dating star?
I'm somewhat taken aback by the level of surprise that I did this. Yeah, that was me at age, I realized actually I was 21. I was at university when it all happened, and
your mum know you'd done this?
No, yeah, I was quite open about
okay.
it. My housemates found it very funny.
It is extremely funny, David. Yeah,
especially when I got through the first round and then had to drive to Bristol for the second round, and they all thought that I was going to get through. So, a bit disappointing. In fact,
they have the banter.
I think one of them might have come with me, actually, and driven me down there. I don't know what he did.
For moral support.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway. Oh, well. What might have been?
Oh, to be able to go back in time and meet 21-year-old David Law in between auditions for Blind Date. Mm. What a time.
Would have been underwhelming for you, but thanks for the thought.
On to all things tennis at the Billie Jean King Cup Finals, at which the semi-final lineup is set. I really feel like I might, even by our very high standards, set a new record for the number of times that I say finals tonight. Let's see. Let's see how we go. The semi-final lineup is set, and it will be Slovenia against Italy. That'll be the early match starting at 10 a.m. And it'll be Czechia against Canada. And that one is starting not before 4 p.m. I think Czechia is probably where we should start. And the way that they booked their place in that semi-final with a 2-1 victory over the USA. I'm imagining, Matt, where you are, the reverberations of that match, all the outcomes are kind of still happening around you. I'm guessing Cathy Rinaldi, through no fault of yours on this occasion, Matt, is somewhere in your midst sobbing and delivering very emotional speeches right now.
Yes, tonight we can blame Molly McElwee. She was the one who asked the question that set Cathy Rinaldi off in the press conference. That was after I'd asked two questions and Taylor Townsend had called me out. And as soon as I started speaking, she went, "Oh no, I recognise your face." Not what you want to be told, really, but it was all in good spirits, and I didn't set Cathy Rinaldi off today, even though I was quizzing her on her team selection. Maybe we will get to that because I think there was a lot to get into there, particularly with the doubles. But yeah, very emotional scenes for Cathy Rinaldi, obviously sort of bowing out as US captain and sort of losing to the other real sort of super weights in this tournament. I mean, I know we were talking the other day about, you know, we sort of thought maybe the US could win this, playing for Cathy Rinaldi, playing for something more than themselves. But when you see that Czech team line up, you know, and realize the actual strength that they have, it was always going to be a tough task to try and, you know, take out the Wimbledon champion in Vondrosheva and one of the best doubles teams of the last few years in Krejcikova and Siniakova. And it was just a step too far, even for a very good US team.
Well, I think we kind of need to talk about the doubles and the singles with this one together, because the doubles ended up being critical. It came down to the decisive doubles tie. And I know you've got the scoop on the ground, Matt, from the US press conference that you've just been in. But there was a last minute change to the US doubles lineup. We thought at the time, because of how emphatic a performance Danielle Collins had put in her singles match earlier on in the day to beat Katerina Siniaková. Was it your take at the time that it was the brilliance of that performance that earned her the spot in the doubles team alongside Taylor Townsend at the expense of Sloane Stephens?
Yes, I would say so. It's always a little tricky with the doubles nominations because they make them in advance of the tie, but it's very much left open that they can change. So I think sometimes we can maybe read too much into changes of nominations in the doubles, you know, because they maybe lined it up on paper that way, but they always intended to change it, you know. I think there's some sort of strategy involved there. However, Cathy Rinaldi admitted, which was pretty much what I thought, that she made that decision because of how convincingly Collins had beaten Siniaková. And not only was it a convincing performance by Collins, it was a convincing performance against the person that she was going to be playing in the doubles. So she felt like that would kind of be an advantage that they would step onto the court with. I also just generally have the sense that Danielle Collins and Cathy Rinaldi are extremely close. And that is not taken a lot of detective work by me. You know, Danielle Collins is extremely open about that. And at both sort of emotional Cathy Rinaldi press conferences that I've attended this week, Danielle Collins has been the one who's sort of gone out of her way to pay tribute to Cathy Rinaldi, even if she's not necessarily asked about her. And she's put her arm around her and she's told stories about just how much Cathy Rinaldi has helped her. You know, during COVID, she was the person that Danielle Collins would always speak to on the phone if she was feeling low. And she told a story about how at this year's French Open, she was feeling really low and came off the practice court crying. And it was Cathy Rinaldi who spent an hour with her, sort of consoling her and making her feel better. And that is, you know, I think we often think of the role of the captain of these Billie Jean King Cup and Davis Cup captains as, you know, sort of a few weeks a year, but actually it's a full year job that they have to be looking out for and looking after their players. And I think Cathy Rinaldi has obviously done that, you know, and Danielle Collins has really felt that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if there was any possibility for Cathy Rinaldi to go to Danielle Collins, to feel like that was the right move, I feel like those two are so tight that she was maybe always going to make that decision, even if Taylor Townsend and Danielle Collins hadn't played together for many, many years. David dug out that it had been 6 years since they had played doubles together. I think an ITF event in Naples, you know, 6 years ago. So they didn't necessarily have the experience of a team together, but Cathy Rinaldi felt that Danielle Collins is a good doubles player in her own right, has had plenty of success on the tour in doubles with other partners. Taylor Townsend's obviously a class act. She felt that that was her best team. And, you know, maybe they didn't have a doubles team that could beat Krejcikova and Siniaková. I think it might well be as simple as that. And, you know, the captain has to make a call, and she went with what she thought, but it didn't quite work out. But, you know, it was a really close match that kind of could have gone either way, even if it did always feel like Krejcikova and Siniaková were the better team.
It was, you know, it was fascinating to watch the match unfold at doubles, because I actually think that selection is fair enough from Cathy Rinaldi. When I heard about it, I think that logic of putting up a player who has just blasted the opponent in singles and really just taken her apart, and the aggression that Collins brings to the table, the intensity allied to that of Townsend, I can see why she went with that. And I probably would have done the same. And as well as digging out that stat, I had a look at Sloane Stephens' doubles record. It's not much to write home about, to be honest. I know she's a, you know, world-class player who's won the US Open and in singles, but, you know, there isn't great pedigree there. There isn't a doubles team, really, in that team. Nothing like could what you've got there with Czechia, and it's... It, and yet they did push them. You know, there were four breaks to serve right at the start of the second set, two each, and they had the break advantage. You know, you just wondered whether they were going to start imposing that singles prowess, really. But then, of course, you know, Krejcikova and Siniaková are good singles players, so it kind of cancels that out anyway. But it was just this sort of sixth sense of knowing what each other was going to do without even... And Siniaková, that little flicker of doubt that I had in my mind as to whether she might be bothered by the fact that there's Collins who's just thrashed me. She was a different player in the doubles. You know, there were shots that Collins was hitting that you're thinking, oh, here we go. You know, she stepped on that. Siniaková would get herself back in the rally, and it's almost like she's more comfortable just with the court dynamic, the logistics of it. When it's doubles, she is just a more proficient tennis player, hence why her ranking is what it is. It's not just that there aren't as many good opponents in doubles. I just genuinely think she's a way better doubles player than she is a singles player. She's a good singles player. She's a brilliant doubles player. And as a pair, they're awesome. And I found myself thinking, you know, when I threw out, oh, I think I'll go for the US to win this thing. It's like when I pick somebody other than Novak Djokovic, or I pick somebody other than Iga Świątek in the final of a tournament, you know, you find yourself thinking, why have I done that? You know, all the evidence is that the Czech team wins the Billie Jean King Cup. Petr Bala, or whatever his record is, I think he's won it six times, you know, since he's been captain. Of course they won, because they always win.
Yeah, and the one person we haven't really mentioned is Markéta Vondroušová, who not only contributed massively with her emphatic victory in the singles, but also I get the feeling is just a really popular member of that team, just fits in really well. Like I feel like she's good for that team. It's not, you know, here I am, the Wimbledon champion now. It's not, I'm the star here. She's just a worker bee, but a worker bee that can put in the kind of performance that she did against Sophia Kenin. She's a fantastic part of that team, I feel.
Yeah, and her record in this competition speaks for itself. She's now won 26 sets in a row in this tournament. You know, she has...
Whoa.
And that's across singles and doubles, mostly
that's
singles.
Incredible.
But yeah, 13 matches won in a row, all of them in straight sets. And I think... exactly as you said, she's a Wimbledon champion, but she's a Wimbledon champion with no real ego. And she didn't want her life, I think, to change massively after winning Wimbledon. You know, I remember we spoke about this immediately after she won. You know, how was her profile in the sport going to change? And obviously a bit, you know, but it doesn't really feel like it's changed enormously. And I think she's quite comfortable with that. And I actually asked Cathy Rinaldi about that selection choice as well, to stick with Kenin, given that she had played 3 hours yesterday. And that was probably the one area where I slightly felt like she was giving a slight mixed message there, Cathy Rinaldi, in that she said, you know, I spoke to Kenin this morning and she told me that she was feeling good. So I put her out on the court. But then she said, but I'm sure she was tired. And I kind of thought, like, well, which is it? Are you trusting your own instincts on that, or are you believing a player? And I'm sure that's a very difficult balance for a captain to strike. But Kenin was flat today in a way that she wasn't yesterday. And I think she was really struggling in the matchup as well. It didn't feel like she enjoyed having to generate her own pace, the sort of junk slow balls that Vondroušová was giving her. She just wasn't handling well at all. And look, again, it may well be a case that they didn't have a player, the US, who could knock Vondroušová off her perch in the kind of form that she's in playing for this Billie Jean King Cup team. So it doesn't feel like a sort of massive clanger at all. But I think maybe there was some reasoning that maybe she could have shaken up that singles lineup, because it was pretty straightforward for Vondroušová today.
Do we know what Cathy Rinaldi is going to do next in her career? Because it strikes me that for the right person, she'd be a fantastic coach.
She is staying on as USTA head of women's development. Now, not entirely sure what that entails, but I guess she's also very heavily involved with the juniors, and I think she puts a lot of time and effort into that. But yeah, I agree. I think just hearing Colin speak about the way that Cathy Rinaldi sort of goes out of her way to just look out for people as people as much as tennis players, I think really sort of does speak to someone who would be a great sort of one-on-one coach for someone as well. But I think for the moment, she's just going to be sort of maintaining the wider interests of US tennis.
So Czechia through to face Canada. That is the second semi-final tomorrow. The first semi-final, as I said, will be Slovenia against Italy. We knew Italy were through. They booked their place in the last four yesterday. It was a shootout between Kazakhstan and Slovenia for the other semi-final spot. And Kazakhstan beat Slovenia, which of course meant Slovenia qualified. Thank you, round robin tennis. Matt, what happened?
Well, you said it. Yeah, that is what happened. I will now try and explain why that means that Slovenia still went through. Basically, they had a better goal difference. They had a much better set ratio, win-loss ratio, than Kazakhstan and than Australia over the course of this group. And that's largely down to Kaya Juvan, actually, who won both of her singles matches in straight sets, starting today against Anna Danilina. Absolutely crushed her. You know how David talks about Cameron Norrie's performance at the French Open this year as kind of his gold standard for terrible performance from a professional tennis player?
For the worst performance that a professional has ever that David has ever seen a professional put in.
It brings me no pleasure, but I would like to submit into the conversation Anna Denalina's performance today. It was horrible. She couldn't find the strings. She, let alone the middle of the racket. It was a horror show, and sort of everything she tried just made it worse. You know, because she couldn't find the strings, she started going for even more daring shots, you know, and sort of trying to hit drop shots that weren't on. And it was just an absolute disaster. And Yaroslava Shvedova, the captain, was just sitting on the bench. She looked in total shock, like there were no words she could give because she just wasn't expecting this at all. Now, there's a huge golfing class between Kaya Juvan, who has been, you know, around 50 in the world at her best and is a quality player. Anna Denalina is currently ranked in the 800s, you know, and there's probably a conversation to be had about whether that does count as professional. You know, she's not maintaining a living off her singles ranking, that's for sure. But as soon as that match, which was won 6-1, 6-love in well under an hour by Juvan, that meant that all Slovenia needed to do was win a set in the two remaining matches. And that is why we ended up in this really unsatisfactory, awkward situation where Tamara Zidanec came out to play Yulia Putintseva and was absolutely brilliant in the first set, just sort of dismantled Putintseva really in that first set. But she knew that she had won and therefore sent Slovenia through just after winning that first set. And then she lost the second set and retired, which was an extremely unsatisfactory way for a sort of tennis match to end. And again, I went into the press conference and I phrased the question to Tamara Zidanec as such so that I gave her the opportunity to blame her shoulder injury, which we spoke about the other day and was, you know, she's playing with a lot of strapping. And, you know, I sort of said, why did you retire from that? And she didn't talk about her shoulder at all. She basically said, well, I knew I was through, so all the adrenaline went. And we're playing again tomorrow. So sort of why would I keep playing? Oof. And that is just not a good look, I'm afraid, for a tournament. That is a bad format that is kind of allowed to happen. And it was a shame because, you know, you want to really celebrate Slovenia. They've had an absolutely amazing moment getting through to the semifinals for the first time. And, you know, we absolutely can do that and we should do that because Juvan and Zidanec have done an amazing job to get them there. But the circumstances were just a bit sort of flat and weird. And that is not what you want.
With Danilina being ranked where she is, basically, and with Kazakhstan needing to win that tie emphatically to go through to the semifinals, they didn't have a chance without Rybakina. That's the bottom line, isn't it? And Rybakina was once again a no-show. I presume the reason for that, Matt, is the same as it was yesterday, and we're blaming Cancun still. What else can we blame on Cancun?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not much to add to that. I think it's very important for the Kazakh Federation that sort of Elena Rybakina be seen to be here and be part of the squad. You know, I think potentially if this was another country, then Elena Rybakina wouldn't even have come, you know, because as you said, if she didn't play in this scenario, which was when they needed her most, she was clearly never going to be fit to play. So sort of what was the point of her being here? But I think the way the Kazakhstan Tennis Federation works, you know, there's a real link between the players and the federation, and there's quite a lot of control that the federation has. And I think that's why Rybakina was here. But I think based on the fact she didn't play today, she was never going to play.
Mm, interesting. Okay, so it is Slovenia that go through to face Italy in tomorrow's semi-finals. On the centre court today, we had some dead rubbers. I have got absolutely no idea what happened in them because I was mostly on a plane and wasn't able to pay any attention. Matt, tell us everything. No need to spend too long on this portion of the show.
Well, the main thing that happened is that Julien Beneteau went off. So we can maybe spend some time on that.
Okay, but maybe, yeah, okay.
The two dead ties were in the evening, a win for Spain over Poland, and in the afternoon, a win for France over Germany. Again, that was a tie that was really disrupted. There was a retirement in the second match, so really not that much tennis actually played in that tie. Julien Beneteau, the French captain, was asked in the encore interview afterwards to sort of give his thoughts, and he complained about the format. He said, "We wanted to play for something, but with this format, it's impossible. The ITF cannot let this happen. They have two matches today on centre court, two dead matches. It's impossible. If you want to promote the tennis, you can see very well all around, it says the World Cup of Tennis. Well, you cannot have two ties in a row on the same day on centre court. It's complete nonsense." So I asked him in the press conference, I said, "Could you explain the changes that you would like to see to the format so that this doesn't happen?" And he said that if you don't change the format and you stay with 12 teams in groups of three, he says the first two should qualify and you should have quarterfinals because every match will therefore count. He said he thinks it's a real issue that you can lose your first match in a group format and be out sort of pretty much straight away. And that is what happened to France today. So he thinks either the group should be with four teams or they need to sort of enforce an extra round here so that two go through. So yeah, he was very, very disappointed. There was a statement from the ITF on the fact that the dead rubbers, you know, the dead ties took place, even though the teams couldn't progress to the semifinals. And they pointed out that although they can't progress through the group, they are still playing for Billie Jean King Cup Nations ranking points. And that determines the year-end rankings, and that determines sort of seedings for the draw for the qualifiers next year. So, you know, in the sort of long term, there was something on the line for those matches today. But, you know, Julien Beneteau has sort of shown that players and teams are not really thinking about that sort of stuff. They're worried about qualification for the semifinals. And in that sense, there was sort of nothing on the line. And it was just a real, real shame that the way the schedule had been organized, that the dead ties were on center court and the live ties were on court one. It was a bit of a mess, really.
David, following on from your spectacular rant about round robin tennis of a couple of days ago, you've had a lot of support. I mean, it's been blown out of the water by the support that you've got for your would-be reality TV career. But you got a lot of support, but you did also get some, not some pushback, but some people gently saying round robin with groups of three is a very different kettle of fish to round robin with groups of four, as we will be seeing at the ATP finals and of course at the WTA finals as well. What say you to that?
Well, I think that pushback has something to it. I do think there's less of this in groups of four. The ATP finals, WTA finals, they have worked pretty well and they have a point of difference with round robin, and you do get that guaranteed three matches of big stars, and I do think there is something to that. I mean, listen, I've been watching the ATP finals since 1991, you know, and so I'm very used to that format. I still find the moments that you get the dead rubbers, or that it's this stuff about just needs to win a set, or it's going to get a game percentage. I just don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy that element of the sport. But it has been heightened in feel this particular week because I just want to see these teams go head to head. It was electric in the United States against Czechia tonight. You know, it was that's what sport's all about. Two teams. There's no doubts as to what the ramifications, the permutations are going to be. It's just who's going to win goes through, and that is sport as everybody understands it. So why aren't we doing that? I just don't understand really why you wouldn't do that. There is going to be a way to figure this out so that isn't necessary.
It is one of the toughest things I do as a TV presenter, doing build up into a dead rubber at the finals. Don't have to do it very often, mercifully, and you know, luckily tennis is such a rich sport, can usually find something to talk about. But treading that fine line of, you know, my job is giving the people at home a reason to care and telling them why they should care. So treading that line of trying to do that, but also not take the piss and hoodwink people watching either and sell them a dud is tough. And I suppose I do resent tennis a little bit for putting me in that position. It's all about me, tennis. Sort yourself out. We'll come on to talk about the ATP finals in just a moment. But first, a quick look ahead to the Billie Jean King Cup semi-finals. I've missed out the opportunity to say finals one more time. The Billie Jean King Cup finals, semi-finals tomorrow. Slovenia, Italy, and Czechia, Canada. What are we expecting? All I can think about is Fernandez in current form against Vondrosheva. That is what I'm here for. That's the party for me tomorrow.
Yes, I agree. I very much think the day will build to that crescendo. In the first one, it's quite interesting. The captains have been very consistent with their team selections. It has been Kaya Juvan and Tamara Zidancic for Slovenia, and it has been Martina Trevisan and Jasmine Paolini for Italy. If that happens, the head-to-heads of those are quite interesting because Slovenia lead in the first one. Juvan leads the head-to-head against Trevisan. And in the other one, Italy lead. Paolini leads the head-to-head against Zidancic. So if that stays true to form and to history, we could be in for a deciding doubles, which again would be interesting because we haven't seen Slovenia need to play Juvan and Zidancic together yet. But that is their strongest doubles. So, you know, you would presume they would do that even with the shoulder injury that Zidancic is sort of nursing and mentioned. So I'm excited for that tie. I think they could be some close matches and, it may well go down to the wire. And then in the other one, yeah, I think the big question is will Stakusic be able to sort of do it again and keep it going? She's going to be playing a sort of level up of opponent. And who will it be? You know, the Czechs have used Noskova, Buskova and Siniakova in singles, and they've still potentially got Krejcikova that they could use in singles. So I think that selection will be interesting. And then, of course, as you said, Fernandez and all of her intensity against Vondrosheva, who I wouldn't say is an intensity list player, but is just such a classy, such a good player who can sort of pick apart anyone. So that's really intriguing as well. But I do think that the Czechs are pretty strong favourites because you would certainly expect them to win a singles match, if not both. I think they're favourites in both. And then they can always fall back on the doubles as well. But yeah, I'm excited for both ties.
Great. All of that to come tomorrow, starting on Sunday, is the Nitto ATP Finals here in Turin.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
I'll get on to the draw in good time. But first and foremost, folks, have you seen the photo?
I had a brief...
The official, the iconic photo, as they call it.
Brief glance.
Could everybody just get it up in front of
yes,
them?
Yes, because I haven't.
So that we can do a full... I'm looking forward to watching your reaction real time.
The first thing that occurred to me, well, I suppose there's two things. One is, remember when they all used to wear those fancy suits and it was all very choreographed?
I
and
do.
The second one was, remember the knitwear of Casper Ruud? But I don't.
Well,
I can't.
He's rather been that knitwear is looking.
Is that a poncho?
Some of these chaps could have done with some Casper Ruud knitwear. Yes, it is, Matt. It looks to me like a sort of alpaca poncho. It's extraordinary.
Lot of jeans.
My question for you is, reverse engineering this, looking at that photo, what do you think the clothing brief was?
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say, what's the sort of standout outfit that we'll be looking back on in...
That's my next
in a week and saying,
question.
Oh, well, of course they were going to win.
It's definitely not Holger Rune's, is it?
No, I mean, it might be Stefanos Tsitsipas's, actually.
Except that he wears that stuff every day.
True. What was
I'm still trying to find the photo.
David, do you want me to send you a link?
Yes, please. I can't find it.
Okay, David, it should be with you now.
Okay.
Say what you see.
Oh, my word. What are they doing? Oh, dear. Why are they dressed like that? I mean, it's just a free-for-all, isn't it? Have they just said, wear what you want?
No, I think they've... No. They've been given a brief.
There's no...
It's not coincidence that two of them are wearing brightly coloured sports jackets, is it?
Alcaraz and
Djokovic.
And those
two happen to be Djokovic and Alcaraz, yeah.
I mean, listen...
So have they been given a separate brief? Wear jeans and a brightly coloured sports jacket? Have Rune and Zverev been told to wear black and stand on the end?
And then Tsitsipas and Rublev are in similar colours, sort of on top anyway. There is a sort of mirror image. There is a sort of slight symmetry to it.
Medvedev looks entirely normal.
Have they been hand-delivered the clothes that they need to wear? Like, is it their own at all? It's a bit weird. I mean, listen, I'm so unqualified to talk about anybody's fashion that I find myself sort of doubting whether I know what I'm talking about. But it does look a bit strange to me.
Shall I get you onto safer ground, David, with the
blind
with
date
the draw?
Okay, yep. Sure.
We have two groups. I don't think they name the groups anymore, do they?
They're the just green red and, group.
Red and green. There used to be, you know, the Leighton Hewitt group and the Jimmy Connors group, but they ran out of players or something. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know which way around they are, but we have one group which features Djokovic, Sinner, Tsitsipas and Runa.
That's the green one.
And the other one is Alcaraz, Medvedev, Rublev and Zverev. Let's assume that's the red one.
It is.
And they've announced the order of play for Sunday and Monday. Sunday will start with Sinner against Tsitsipas in the afternoon, with Djokovic, Runa in the evening session. And then Monday we'll see Alcaraz against Zverev and Medvedev against Rublev. What do we think, David?
When you see them written down like that, they're quite exciting groups, really. I think it's actually it's a really strong lineup this year. It feels like, yeah, they all eight players, and I even include Rublev in this, who I do sort of damn with faint praise a lot of the time as not having much acceleration to his game. You know, he has his full throttle game and that's that, and if you're better than that you win. I feel like he's shown a bit more than that in the last 6 months, so you know. And I actually think, look, he beat Zverev the other day, and I think he's playing pretty well. I mean, I'm looking forward to all of Djokovic's matches, actually. Sinner, because I think he's coming on strong and he's improved, and I want to see.
They've never played on a hard court, those two,
right? And I want to see that it's the yardstick, isn't it? I want to see has Sinner got any closer, because he's playing well against everyone else. Runa, because he's beaten him a couple of times before, and they did have another good match the other day. I suppose, look, Tsitsipas never gets near Djokovic, does he? Really, but he's had a bit of an improvement of late. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I think in the other group, Alcaraz Medvedev is the real standout, because of the match they played at the US Open, sort of upsetting the form book really there. So I'm looking forward to seeing that again. I think there is.
Alcaraz, Rublev have never played.
Yeah, and I bet those will be spectacular rallies. I think Alcaraz generally is interesting because, do you remember when Nadal just never really used to play well at the end of the year and he was struggling indoors? I know he might not have such an extreme game, Alcaraz, for clay, certainly, as Nadal did, and outdoor generally, but he has not proved anything really indoors yet, has he? He has not really had many good results indoors at all at the end of the year. And he looks unconvincing. He looks less special to me indoors, and I don't really know why. Yeah. But maybe he's just not in form, but I don't know why.
And it's exactly the same quandary as we always had with Rafael Nadal, and I'm tentatively talking about Nadal in the past tense, just because I don't want to jinx things or get hopes up, but just know that I'm aware that I'm doing that and it makes me sad. But exactly the same quandary as we used to have with Rafael Nadal, where it's impossible to isolate the two factors of time of year and conditions indoors to determine what it is that's making him not a shadow of himself, really. Is it that it's the end of a long season and he plays such a physical brand of tennis that, of course, he can't keep it up until the very end of the haul, especially when the very, very biggest prizes aren't on the line? Or is it because indoor tennis just doesn't suit him, doesn't suit his game, or he's not used to playing on it?
Why would that be?
I'm sure the boring answer is it's a combination of the two. Mm. But I'd love to know where one factor ends and the other begins.
You got any theories, Matt, as to why Alcaraz hasn't yet? I mean, I know it's only a couple of seasons so far. Injuries obviously a part. He had an injury at the end of last year. But do you know what I mean? Even when you watch him, it looks like his game is a little less spectacular and penetrating.
Yeah. I mean, I did have a conversation with Matt Futterman earlier this year and about indoor sport and indoor tennis generally. And he said something which has stuck with me ever since, where he said, if you take an outdoor sport and put a roof on it, it instantly gets a little bit more boring. And I do think there's something to that.
I'm with him on that.
You know, Carlos Alcaraz.
I'm absolutely.
You know,
with him
Carlos
on that.
Alcaraz is all about the vibes and the spectacular, as you say. And I do think that indoor tennis just is a little bit less of that. There's just a little bit less show generally. But I think there's probably more salient points which you've made as well about the game and the time of year and the fact that he's been injured. You know, kind of. The last 2 years, this time of year, I don't fully feel like we've had a chance to see full throttle Alcaraz yet, and I hope desperately that that's what we get in Turin. I must say these groups really grew on me because my first two reactions upon seeing them were, oh no Alcaraz Sinner, you know, that has been such a highlight whenever they've played. So I was looking forward to seeing that. Of course, they could meet later in the tournament, but you know, not having that guaranteed, I was initially a bit disappointed. And also, like, I don't need Medvedev Zverev in my life again. Like, I've seen that match so many times, and it doesn't do a lot for me as a match. It'll probably be the best match of the tournament now I've said that, but just generally, matchup wise, it doesn't do much for me. But as you said, Sinner having to play Djokovic instead is maybe more interesting because we haven't seen it. And Sinner with the Italian crowd behind him, you know, how will that sort of transform him? Will it transform him like it did a couple of years ago? Runa Djokovic always tends to deliver the goods. And I think it's a really interesting group for Tsitsipas to be in because, you know, I think of him as, I sort of think of him alongside Zverev, Rublev and Medvedev in terms of that wave of players who were challenging the big three.
The OG next
exactly.
gen.
And he's now in a group with the younger generation of Sinner and Runa. And there's, you know, he needs to reassert his position a bit because he's been overtaken, certainly by Sinner. Runa's coming as well. And I just feel like that's quite an interesting sort of they're not totally different generations. There's not a huge age gap between them. But in tennis terms, they feel like different generations. And I think I'm just interested to see Tsitsipas go up against them rather than see matches that I feel like I've seen so many times before, which is Tsitsipas against Rublev or Zverev. So I think from that point of view, I think it's quite an interesting group for Tsitsipas to land in.
Really interesting point. I'm fascinated by Rublev generally in this tournament because one of my abiding memories from the whole of last year really was Runa being here as an alternate in Turin last year and having the bad fortune of being the first alternate at one of the only ATP finals where there were no withdrawals. So he didn't get a chance to play. Usually someone falls by the wayside and David Ferrer gets a go. But not this time. And he was there practicing every day like a caged animal, just looking like he was going to burst out of his skin with desire to get out onto that match court. Just the desperation in him. And I thought, looking at him then, it would have surprised me that it had been so close to the wire that he... his qualification this year, obviously the second half of the season has not gone well for him and those problems haven't evaporated, but there have been signs of rejuvenation. I assume Boris Becker is going to be here with him this week. That'll be interesting. And I'm just interested whether he can take his rejuvenation to the next step, because this is a big deal for him. You know, him being here last year, I just felt like there was no way he was going to let himself not qualify 12 months later. So pretty interested by that. Also saw on social media today that Alcaraz and Djokovic played a practice set today, and Djokovic won it 6-1.
Oh, did he?
I mean, probably meaningless. I can, but
I'm not sure.
There you go.
I'm not sure about that. I feel like it goes with what I feel a little bit about Alcaraz at the moment. He's not what he was a couple of months ago. At the moment, you know, it doesn't mean he's not going to be, but indoors, I don't think he's going to do much at this event, really. I'd have to see something to make me feel differently anyway, at the moment. And just looking at the eight players, I did get a buzz of excitement because I think all of them have a chance to really do something. I don't feel like there's a player that is... I don't look at anybody and think, oh, there are three duffers, you know, just not going to get a look in. I don't feel that. But I do see the name Zverev, and I don't feel completely comfortable about the fact that he's in it. And listen, he's allowed to play in it. In the reporting of Tamani Karyal, he's had a penalty order for a domestic abuse allegation by his former partner, who's the mother of his child, and he is strongly rejecting that allegation and contesting it and taking it to trial. And according to the court, the presumption of innocence should continue. But, you know, I've had this in the pit of my stomach, and I was trying to work out what to think. And John Wertheim today tweeted, Zverev gets to keep playing and earning, but at what price? He said, in the face of multiple domestic violence allegations, and bear in mind there have been two now, one of which wasn't taken to legal authorities, but which was reported a couple of times with some detail and was looked into by the ATP, and they said that there was insufficient evidence to take it and actually charge him. But John said, in the face of multiple domestic violence allegations and one adjudication, you still let a guy compete. He said, players and tournaments are put in a bad spot. There are close calls. This ain't one, he said. Bad luck all round. Now, I know not everybody agrees with John on that. Not everybody agrees with me. But I don't feel entirely comfortable. I won't feel entirely comfortable watching it all this next week, personally.
I think even if you don't agree that he shouldn't be out there playing, I definitely don't think anybody should be feeling entirely comfortable watching him right now. Yeah, it's uncomfortable. It's extremely uncomfortable, and the ATP are silent on it. I suppose, you know, as you say, David, the presumption of innocence legally remains. So the ATP, I guess, would point to the fact that from their point of view, nothing has changed. But people have their views on that for sure. We keep ending on bum notes. Anybody got any blind date anecdotes?
Oh, dear. I was 21. What can I say? 30 years ago. Goodness me.
Was it
floppy hair
in the middle of the Lost Law years?
I had floppy Hugh Grant hair. And no, it was after the Lost Law years. I'd already successfully made it.
Found.
I'd successfully made it to university, and was tearing it up. Apart from, you know, the diversion to blind date auditions that didn't go so well. That was a little regression into the Lost Law years of failure. But apart from that, I was doing all right.
Matt, how was lunch? That's what we can end
on. Oh, thank goodness. Except it's probably going to be terrible.
Well, I changed strategy today.
Oh, yeah.
And went to the fan zone for lunch. Man of the people that I am. I bought myself a burger from the fan zone.
Did you take your chocolate with you from the Kazakhstan fan?
I didn't actually, but that will be enjoyed in a quiet moment.
How was the burger? Was it a good
It was
decision?
A good decision. It was fine. It wasn't a world beating burger, but compared to some of the food I have been having, I enjoyed it very much.
Good what strategy.
What will you do tomorrow?
Well, there are other options in the fan zone, so it may be that I, you know, try the rest of their menu.
Okay. Well, you'll have to tune in tomorrow to find out what he does, folks. How's that for a tease? We'll, of course, be back tomorrow with our fifth Billie Jean King Cup Finals Daily Pod. Two more days to go. Then we get into Turin and then we get into the Davis Cup Finals. It is all happening, folks. We have our mascots throughout all of it, our trusty mascots, Xenia, Maisie and Darwin. A collective hello to you all. Billie Jean is with my brother and Millie at the moment, and my lovely baby niece, who's taking more of an interest in Billie Jean, is the news.
What's Billie Jean make of it all?
Yeah, she's used to people taking an interest in her.
Is she okay with people taking an interest in someone other than her?
We were concerned about jealousy, but she's been good on that front.
Marvellous.
Remarkably magnanimous.
Well done, Billie Jean.
She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Our top folks and executive producers are Jamie, Drew and Hannah.
I don't like it.
Jamie, Hannah and Drew. It works.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying it on for size. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We have Marvin Brittman in Austin, Texas.
Hello, Marvin.
Right, Marvin.
I'd love to go to Austin, Texas. Mm. It's on my to-visit list.
Yes, me too.
Same. And
like Hank Marvin.
Isn't that...
Not a tennis player, but...
Isn't that where Andy Roddick lives, Austin, Texas?
Yes, and I think his son is named Hank. Would you believe?
And he used to have a dog called Billie Jean, although I think she's now deceased.
Okay.
But there you go.
Very good.
Quite proud of my Hank Marvin.
Thank you. Hang on. Is this Marvin or Hank?
Marvin.
Marvin.
Yes. Sorry. Right.
So someone having a son called Hank is not particularly relevant.
Well, no, because David came
but
up
my,
with
my
a...
My reference point was
Hank
Marvin.
Marvin.
Hank.
Come
Hank
on.
Marvin Starvin. Got any rhyming slang, isn't it? Marvin, we've got quite far from the point, but thank you very much for your support.
We've also got Alex Green, who is in the Wirral.
Right, Alex.
Hello, Alex, in the Wirral. The Skubskis are from that area, aren't they?
They are.
Alex Bogdanovich.
Yep.
Alex
O'Brien, an American tennis player from yesteryear. So why on earth didn't either one of us come up with Alex Dimonor, but Matt did? Putting us both to shame.
No, I think you're putting me to shame. The more obscure is more impressive in many ways.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Thank you very much. Okay, then.
Greens.
Well, can I
the
just...
Green group? The green group in the ATP finals?
Yes. Can okay. I also just say Alex Antonich, an Austrian tennis player from my era of the 90s.
Okay.
Matt.
Now there's...
You can and you have.
Now you're just
he's a
showing
commentator
off.
Now. No, I mean, you know, if you can do, I say.
We
thank
move
you,
on
Alex.
To Morag. We know Morag.
All right, Morag.
Morag McLeod.
Yes.
Hey.
Hello, Morag.
Morag is in Scotland, and she says, I share a birthday with, if not the tennis talent, of Bianca Andreescu.
Oh, I haven't done much thinking about Bianca Andreescu recently. That's not good, is it?
No.
Anyway.
But still.
Anyway.
A good person to sort of share anything with, I'd say, Morag.
Absolutely. Thank you, Morag, for your continued support.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
And finally, we have Jake from Oakland, California. And Jake was one of our newsletter predictors during the French Open this year. I met Jake in Paris. Very nice guy.
Go, Jake. How did he get on?
Hello, Jake.
In the predictions?
Oakland, formerly home of the Raiders. I have an Oakland Raiders cap. Some, or my parents do, somewhere in their loft from a family holiday in California.
You're quite into the old NFL now, aren't you? You quite like it.
Well, I mean, that was from sort of 1998.
But you do, though, cap. Don't you?
But just showing off my extensive knowledge, David. If you can, do.
Jake, like Jake Garner, the former umpire and now a referee.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Thank you very much, Jake. Thanks to all our shout-outs.
Why is that
Thank
so
you,
funny?
Everyone. My dad is going to hate this podcast. He's already sent me two messages about there being too much giggling this week.
Sorry,
and
Mr.
he mentioned
Whittaker.
It on the phone earlier. Sorry, Dad. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.